Welcome, By the Numbers. Tyson Banker, your host with you here, BenchClear Media. Really excited for the show today. Finally get to dive into the vintage cards that, you know, I've had vintage cards spotlight on my show and been highlighting older cards and probably wrongfully calling some of the cards vintage that really aren't. And I'm excited to bring on the guy that Ty had a great show with, Rylan Nolan. Had to bring him on because of his expertise in vintage. Thanks for joining us, Ryan. And
thanks for having me on.
Why don't you tell us about your card show quest, since that's been all the topic and the headline of Ty's show was 47 card shows. How are we doing on that?
Yeah, so I finished card show number 50 last weekend in Philly. This weekend is Collectors Con in Tampa, which is 51, and then the following weekend's in Alabama, which is 52. So be knocking out the 52 shows, taking like a few weeks off, relaxing a little bit because it's been hectic all year. And yeah, it's been a fun ride with that.
So when we say quantitative, doing 52 shows, that obviously sounds insane. But then when you think about actually doing it, has it taken away the love at all for you of going to the card shows? Or is it still just pretty, like, is it awesome every time you go? Are you enjoying it or is it getting more like work?
I'll be honest, it's been really enjoyable throughout the year. Last weekend kind of felt like work a little bit because I had to get up at 3 a.m. to catch a flight. And I came home at about 2 o'clock and at the night. So it was pretty much 23 hours up straight, just going, traveling to Philly, flying back. And then that Sunday, throughout this entire week, I've been working on my book nonstop. I have work full time, so I'll work from 8 to 5, and then I'll work on the book when I get home all the way till like 1 or 2 in the morning. So I'm a little exhausted from everything, but I'm trying to finish and grind through it.
Yeah. Do you want to share real quick, just kind of share with the listeners a little bit about your book real quick?
Yeah, so I've been working the last 11 months on a book on how to spot fake cards. So it's about 180 pages. The first 70, 80 pages talks about different concepts on how people can identify fake cards, all the different signs of alterations and things along the lines with that. And then the next 100 or so pages is based around the top 50 fake cards in the hobby, where I break down pictures I found on different marketplaces or at card shows, along with a picture of a real one, and have bullet points talking about what makes a card real, what makes it fake, so that way you can use it as a guide. So I have a Kindle version, which I've been working on all night today, just making sure it formats with that. And I have the other version as well. I'm opening up pre-orders probably early next week, or I don't know when this is going to be fully on, but it might be out already. And also going to have copies on Amazon as well. The pre-orders are going to be signed copies on my website, a little bit cheaper than what Amazon is.
Well, that's awesome. I definitely will be checking out the Kindle version, or I'll get a version of some kind. That seems like a really interesting book for sure. I think one thing I hate about fake cards is that sometimes I feel bad for the guys that are trying to sell a card when they don't know it's fake. Like they picked it up and then they're the ones that look like the scapegoats, and feel so bad for
them. I know. And that happens a lot with the vintage cards. I see a lot more vintage fake cards than anything else. But recently there's been a change towards kind of like the PMGs and the more modern side of things as well. I mean, football wise, the one of the most fake cards out there, obviously, the 2000 Bowman Brady. What I find interesting with that card is I've seen multiple iterations of the fake now over this past year. The first fake I saw at shows and online didn't have any foil on it. The face and colors and everything was washed on the card. So it's pretty obvious fake to see. Like, obviously, if there's no foil, it's not the Brady rookie. The Bowman has the foil, and at the bottom, there's foil saying Tom Brady. Well, on the new iterations of the fake, now there's foil. The colors are still washed. But that's the issue with that. And what makes it scary is people are putting the fake foil ones in fake PSA slabs.
Right. That's the only thing about PSA being somewhat basic of a slab. It's pretty easy to mimic, which is a little bit scary too. And even some companies have come out and they almost look identical and you're like, oh, that's not a PSA slab. So yeah. It's definitely crazy, but definitely a great book. So I hope all the listeners check that out. Good luck with that, Ryan. That's quite the accomplishment to write a book, sir. So well done.
Thank you.
So I thought we'd just go through a Q&A just again to, honestly, I want you to help educate me and the listener just a little bit about what you know of football vintage. I know baseball is your wheelhouse, but just the fact that you have a great background of vintage card collecting, I thought we would pick your brain.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So then, I mean, obviously you're a much younger guy at your age. What got you into vintage collecting? Because I think the narrative sometimes is that the older crowd is the people that appreciate vintage the most.
Yeah, no, I got into vintage because my dad, he owned a card shop in the 90s, ended up closing it down, got in the hobby once again when I was born, but always preached, you know, there's millions of brand new cards. They're only going to print out so many old cards. And top of that, the preservation wasn't there in comparison to new cards. New cards literally goes straight from a box now to a penny sleeve and into a top loader. I mean, if you don't get an 8, 9, or 10 on that, I don't know what to say. I mean, obviously there's some manufacturing issues, but most of them are already ready to get graded high end grades. Now, if you look in the past, whether it's pre-war or vintage 50s through 70s, you don't have that case. People didn't have the supplies all available to them. And that's why you don't see as many 8s, 9s, and 10s. And that's why for those players and certain key rookie cards, there's a premium based around this.
Right. Definitely. I think so. I mean, can I say that you like it because of scarcity a lot? The scarcity is a big pull. Yeah.
Scarcity. And it's a little bit more of a conservative investment or standpoint of like collecting rather than a lot of the new players, because there's always someone new to chase after, but the opportunity for them to become a top 10 player, a top 20 is very, very slim. And people put way too much money into new players expecting them to be the greatest of all time or top player. Yet you can buy that top 10 player often cheaper in a high grade. So at what point is your trade-off, whether you want to buy someone that's already one of your best football players of all time, so when people are going to remember 40, 50 years from now, or I know football's not really prospect, but rookies that are kind of unproven yet just coming straight out of college, maybe they had a great year, maybe they might have won a Heisman Trophy, but are we really going to put all that money towards that player versus when you have an established player to go after?
Yeah, it is amazing to see. Even I'm an Oregon fan, and Justin Herbert's rookie cards go for a pretty penny, and you think about the kind of vintage you can buy with that penny. It's kind of hard to fathom when you see the pop reports of some of the Justin Herbert prisms, even though, like I said, I'm a fan. I think he's a great player, but he's no, you know, Jerry Rice or any of those type of guys. So definitely.
There's still so many Jerry Rice cards too.
Yeah.
A lot less than Herbert's. And Rice is widely considered the best wide receiver of all time.
Definitely. Definitely. So obviously, I think you're probably definitely a unique person of how you're into vintage. You mean having that kind of background with your dad. That's an awesome story. I think question sometimes is how does vintage sustain when the people that are main part of the hobby aren't aware of who Willie Mays is or Jim Brown is or the older players? How does vintage still survive when the like not really knowing much about the player is an issue in your mind?
I think over time people start researching and figuring out where vintage is. I mean, no one goes straight from buying modern cards to vintage. If you come into the hobby, you're not going to go out there and buy pre-war cards. You're going to go out there and buy what everyone else is buying. You're going to buy a brand new box. Let's say you find a 2021, whether it's like a Prism box, Optic, or whatever football box is out there, and you're going to buy that and open up and find all those players. But over time, some people start getting bored of modern products and start going back. We already see a lot of people now going towards the 90s inserts. Well, what happened? Yeah. Get bored with the 90 inserts. Oh, let's check out the 80s. Oh, let's check out the 70s. Let's check out the 60s. And just the progression of going from modern all the way to vintage. And as people, like I said, become more familiar with the hobby, they get more experience, they're going to start slowly picking up the names when people make some comparisons like, oh, Herbert is a great quarterback, but how does he compare to a Bart Starr or a Johnny Unitas or any other vintage quarterback? And there's discussions that are made from that, and they might hear that name, Bart Starr. Oh, who's Bart Starr? Look it up. Oh, Green Bay Packers, really, really good. Oh, who's Unitas? Oh, with the Colts. Oh, he's a great quarterback as well. And, you know, start falling into that rabbit hole and start at the vintage side of things, because I think that's eventually going to happen with a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of happened with me a little bit. I mean, being born in 85, I was a big Cowboys. I'm a big Cowboys fan, so obviously Emmitt Smith, Troy Aikman, and all those guys. I was a huge Peyton Manning fan, just watching him, just seeing how he played the game. So, like, I kind of got into those 90s inserts you're talking about, like those 95, those flair rookies of Peyton Manning I really got into. I do want to go back because, you know, I also have connections to, like, playing Techno Bowl when I was young and playing with Walter Payton. Like, those things still matter. Those things still kind of resonate with me. So I definitely will be working my way backwards as well. So I think it's kind of cool that you kind of mentioned that. In your mind, like what year defines like a vintage card? Cause like I said, we can probably agree that like probably Jerry Rice, no, Barry Sanders, no, Troy Aikman, no, these are all 80s, cards. Like in your mind, where does that vintage line-ish kind of sit?
I know a lot of collectors either say it's 75 or 79, at least on the baseball side for 75, just because the 75s were kind of like a vintage design with how the colors pop. And then 76 through 79, their designs are in comparison. Okay. But I know a lot of people have a hard deadline of 1979 and older is vintage. But I mean, as there's more and more cards, I mean, even if you think about it, 1980 is 41 years I mean, at a certain point, you can't not consider it vintage, but there has to be some name towards it. Because 1980, it's not fully junk wax as well. So I think we're going to see more names pop off from like 80s, mid-80s and different things like that over time.
Yeah. Well, because I mean, honestly, when you look at the 1990 score set versus the cards now, I mean, that looks vintage-ish to me, you know, like the portrait, the green borders. I mean, that's not happening anymore. So I know 90s is not close to vintage, but I think you're right. It's going to work that way eventually. Definitely. That's cool. So they kind of almost pre 80.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's funny though, because you hear a lot of newer collectors that say the Tom Brady rookie card is vintage.
Oh man. A 2000 card being vintage. Now we're feeling old. At least I am. So like in modern cards, many are trying to find like the next big thing. Like you said earlier in the show, they're trying to find that player ascending, or, you know, Trout or Tom Brady, who's playing now at an all time high. I just wondered, from a vintage collecting standpoint, is there ever like hidden gems that you look for, or just guys that are maybe overlooked within the hobby that you can find good deals on, or just that are that have a chance to grow in value? Or is vintage pretty much kind of just straight? Kind of guys can stay in their spot.
Honestly, I look at a lot of the vintage quarterbacks, they're just way undervalued comparison to the modern guys. I mean, just look how much Herbert's going for, or look how much of Mahomes is going for. Yet you can find a lot of the greats in the 50s through 70s dirt cheap in comparison.
Yeah. I mean, even like Joe Montana's rookie cards, not even close to those guys, which is kind of ridiculous. When he's some consider him the best quarterback of all time before Tom Brady went on his run. So that's definitely something to consider. Cool. In terms of like vintage, talk to me about your kind of pre-war vintage and how that like plays into vintage. I know you know a lot about that, and I don't, and I just want to learn. So what is your kind of, what does the pre-war vintage mean besides pre-war?
So it's before World War II. And a lot of people don't realize there's a lot of football cards before and pre-war. Everyone knows about baseball being pre-war. Some people might know about boxing, but there's a rich football history, and that goes back into the college days of football. So the first card was actually in Goodwin Champions in 1888.
Wow. And
the first actual full football set was, I think it's in the 1890s. I want to say it's 1894. Can't remember the exact year, because Mayo made it. They made a few different sets. They had a boxing set, which was exactly in 1890. They had a baseball set, which might have been 94, and then they also had the football set. But they had about 30 or so different collegiate football players between Yale, Harvard, and Princeton in that set. And that's, again, 1890s. So those two sets all the way in the 1800s, and then the early 1900s as well. You had the Sporting Kings from Gowdy, which has Newt Rockne. Then you had the National Jiggle set, which has the Bronco rookie card. I think it's his rookie card, not fully sure, but it's one of before the Tom Brady cards blew up, the Bronco was one of the most expensive cards in the hobby. I believe a high grade actually was the most expensive football card. I don't think there has been any recent sales of a high grade anytime recently, but that was the go-to card for like vintage football or football in general for the longest amount of time, 1935 Bronco.
Wow. That's crazy. That's a long time ago. Yeah. So football goes back a lot farther than probably most collectors realize.
Yeah. And it's really cool with it too. I mean, you're not going to have a lot of professional per se, but you still have all the different college players, and they're very, very collectible for quite a few people.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That's cool. The other question I want to ask you, I mean, obviously we just talked about, you've been to 50 card shows. I'm just wondering, when you're walking around a card show, like how well do you know these vintage sets? I mean, you said, you know, you can say baseball or football, but when you're walking around, or you kind of have to be like, oh, which one is that? Or do you feel like you have them down pretty well, knowing what sets are what when it comes to each sport?
I have them down pretty well. Football, sometimes I mess up on a few years just because I don't deal with it as much as baseball, but Larry Baseball seconds can pretty much name anything across the board. Pre-war, I'm pretty good at. Some of the strip cards are kind of, and because a lot of them kind of look similar, and there's so many different abbreviations of them. They're all numbered based, mostly comparison to like, okay, it's like, oh, Tops, and you know the exact year. All of them are like the weird names on that side of things, but it's pretty easy at this point.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a lot of sets to kind of know. That's pretty impressive. That's impressive, Ryan. I guess actually one last question I was going to ask you is, do you have a favorite vintage football set?
Favorite vintage football set, man. If I was going to buy some cards, it'd be the Mayo set. I just think they're really cool. It's the first football set ever produced. And I already have some of the Mayos for boxing. None of the baseball yet, but I just really like the design.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. Cool. Well, I thought we'd just round this out, Ryan, by throwing up a couple of your vintage cards. As we go through, we have six cards to show the listeners today. And as we go through them, even just kind of talk about how you got them. I'm going to talk about the pricing and like kind of the pop report so people kind of see the scarcity. But I thought that would be a fun thing for us to do is kind of go through what you brought for us.
Yeah.
So we'll start with – sorry, go ahead.
I'll say all these cards are pretty much pickups, I think, within this year. So I have a lot of football cards at PSA right now, so I can take pictures of those. But
awesome. Perfect. So the first one we got up is a 1961 Topps Paul Hornung. Now, number 40, his raws are pretty affordable on 15, PSA 6 for 30, only 464 graded with only 16 nines. So definitely a nine is a very rare card. 6 to 8 is the majority of the pop report with 320. So what do you like about this card? What made you pick this one up?
I just thought it looks pretty nice overall. I mean, it's a 61, so it's pretty old in that side of things, and you can't go wrong with it. I know it's not his rookie card. I believe his rookie was in 57, so it's a few years later, but just presents extremely well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, being a Packer, like Packers were the, you know, one of the better teams to be around those days. They still are, but.
With Bart Starr, the first Super Bowl, and then he was with Notre Dame too. So we look at from college football perspective, played for one of the biggest schools, like a legacy on that side of things, and then also winning the first Super Bowl. So pretty good.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, card number two, I definitely like this one quite a bit. Playing receiver in college myself, I'm definitely a receiver fan. So Steve Largent, I'm also from the Northwest. So Steve Largent, 1977, what number 177, his rookie card, I believe, right?
Yeah, that is his rookie card.
Yeah, so those raw go for 6 to 20, PSA 9 for 526. So there's some value there people are chasing. PSA 7 for 70, that kind of sounds good to me. Just get that in my collection. Over 3,000 submitted, so pretty good chunk submitted for an older card, but you can see only 25 tens, definitely hard to gem, 421 nines, so definitely a pretty cool card to have. So what do you think about your Largent card?
A little off-center, but it was one of the cards that presented well. I think I paid like $5 or $10 for it. So there's a lot of options out there if you go through like bargain bins or know your cards out there, and that's one of those type of cards you pay $10 for, you get it graded when PSA opens up again for like $30, or you just send it to SGC, and it's one of those that have opportunity to make money on.
Yeah, definitely. And even in just putting that card in a slab to preserve it long-term, you know, just get a little bit better, better long-term condition so it doesn't have to go through the spokes anymore.
Argent also is a great wide receiver too.
Yeah, very underappreciated, I think, as a career receiver, definitely. If you have 1957, Topps Y.A. Tittle, number 30. So his raw goes for 10 to 26, PSA 6 for 55, PSA 9 for 96. Really rare, like 641 submitted, only 7 nines. It's kind of $96 for
that seems like a bargain at a PSA 9 for 96.
That's what I was thinking when I saw it. Because I mean, if there's only 7 of them, that's ridiculous. Yeah. So somebody got to steal. But tell me a little about this card.
Another great player. What I was talking about earlier with quarterbacks being undervalued. 1957 is a great year for quarterbacks. Now, this isn't a Tittle's rookie card. There's the Bart Starr rookie in the set. But still, like you can't go wrong with a card that presents extremely well, especially in the 1950s. I mean, looking at it, it was probably, what, like a 6 or 7, just looking at it far away.
Mm-hmm. I just think, to me, this card design is probably the best one that you sent me. I think kind of having the portrait next to like an action shot is pretty cool. And then I think it's also pretty cool, like looking at like, it says back 49ers, not running back, not quarterback. It just says back. So I think that's pretty funny too. Just kind of see like kind of older stuff. Awesome. All right. Next one, Larry Zonka rookie, 1969. So that goes for like 30 to 40. PSA 8, 305, PSA 7, 127. So he's pretty valued within the hobby for his graded, probably playing on the Dolphins definitely helped.
Yep, undefeated team.
Yep, and so his pops around 2055, one PSA 10, 39 PSA 9. So definitely a hard card to gem. So yeah. That PSA 8 is a pretty good deal as well for seeing that pop report.
I really like it because these cards are hard to find in really good shape. And when you see them at a show, the 69s you grab them, it's kind of like the 63 tops for baseball or the 71s. They chip so easily, and especially on the red with this Zonka. So I saw it in great shape, decided to pick it up.
I mean, that does look in great shape for a raw card. Are you planning on subbing it?
One day.
Yeah, one day. That's awesome. Perfect. Slide 5. We got a big one coming on slide 6. Yep. 1950. So our oldest one you sent me, Sammy Baugh, number 100. 95 raw, PSA 7, 305, PSA 8, 570. There's only 439 of these cards graded by PSA with four PSA 9s. So definitely a rare PSA 9 and even 70 PSA 8s quite rare as well. With that, they're half the population being 6 and 7s. Tell me about this card. What do you think about your 1950 Bowman?
Sammy Baugh, really great quarterback. 1950 Bowman, the same exact design as baseball as well. So I wanted to pick up a 1950 Bowman, saw the ball at a card show and grabbed it. I mean, I think it presented really well. I think it was probably a 7-ish, just remembering it. But yeah, can't go wrong with it.
Yeah, that 7 would be a great deal for you. That's good. It's a good good looking card. Kind of funny, those kind of cards that aren't the normal shape. Instantly, you're like, that's not the normal shape of a card. Like, the normal size. So I like that a lot.
Standardized it in 1957 with Topps baseball cards. That's the first one they had kind of normal. And from there on, the hobby started going towards that because they were oversized in the 50s. And then before that, like with Bowman, they had different designs or different sizes for 50 and then 51 as well. So it's just funny. It's been standardized for such a long time.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a cool looking card. All right, and your big one here. So you have 1958 Topps Jim Brown rookie. You have a looks like a BGS 5. Yep, raw. Yeah. What's that?
A BVG 5, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Raw 685, PSA 3 1200, PSA 5 3000, PSA 6 4300. The pop on these, I actually had that pulled up. I just didn't put it in the slide. Let me just grab that real quick. Why don't you tell us how you got this card? You have a pretty good story about how you acquired it.
Yeah, I mean, I got this card pretty much through wheeling and dealing at different card shows. So has to go all the way back into, I think it was early January when the Tiger Woods cards exploded. So I was at a card show in Clearwater and I saw a nice Bob Gibson rookie card. It was a PSA 4. And at the time Tiger Woods cards exploded, I was going through dollar boxes and bargain bins and I found two Tiger Woods cards across two different shows. One was like a KSA, it's like a Canadian grading company. It was like a 9.5 and then also a raw one. So I traded both of those. I traded a Carmen Electra refractor card I found in a dollar box and I think $100 and a Steph Curry prism, which was like a PSA 9. It was like a red or something like that, which I found in a $20 box for this Bob Gibson. So I think I had like $150 or $160 into a Bob Gibson PSA 4. And then I took the Gibson and I went to the Wisconsin Dells card show and I traded the Bob Gibson, a 1954 Ted Williams. It was the last card in the set, PSA 3, I believe, a Jack Johnson 1948 Leaf, which I had for the longest amount of time, couldn't have paid much for it, and $800. And I got this Jim Brown. So in total, I was in $800 plus $180 for the one trade, so $980. Plus, I think for that Ted Williams, I was into it for about $200 or so. And then that Jack Johnson, probably $20. So $1,200 into this card.
Wow. So $1,200 into this card and you about four extra money because, you know, this your one's probably right in the 3 to 4 range there. So that's pretty awesome trade up, man. That's a good story. Jim Brown's pop, he's got 3,700 submitted. Only 6 9s, 198 for 8s. And then he's got about, I'd say 1800 that are 5s and 7s kind of all together there. So, I mean, for one of the best running backs of all time, he has a lot more than just playing the running back position, very similar. A lot of guys that kind of broke those barriers in terms of color and stuff. Jim Brown was definitely a part of that. So his card's going to be worth a lot for a long time because for him, it's not just for football, even though he's really good at that.
Correct. That's all. And the one thing that's good about this Jim Brown is it's pretty nicely centered. A lot of the value on the card is the centering and eye appeal on it, especially in the mid-tier grades, because you can't always predict or promise that every card is going to get, a 4 through 6 can be nicely centered. And you can see this one, it's slightly off-centered, but like from a distance, it looks really, really good compared to other ones because a lot of them are almost all the way over in the border. And
yeah,
really good. Yeah. That's why a lot of these prices for the grades also fluctuate quite a bit.
Okay. Yeah, definitely your left to right does not look bad at all. I mean, you can see a little bit top to bottom. That right. Might be a little bit of the picture, but definitely good card. And I did notice as well on a lot of the, when I was looking at sales and stuff, a lot of the sales are like, great centering. You can tell people are selling the centering for the Jim Brown as well.
So with that year, because it's the centering was so bad on them.
Right. Well, you get those white borders with the color background like that and the circle in the middle that definitely kind of throw off the perception for sure. Well, perfect, Ryan. Well, I really appreciate you joining me and just going through all that vintage stuff with us. That was awesome. Before we get out of here, I just wanted to ask you one question, kind of put you on the spot. Who's winning the Super Bowl this year?
I hope the Bucks, because I'm from Florida. I grew up in Florida, so.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're kind of the chalk, I'd say. They hit the best quarterback in the game, and they got pretty young guys around it to make it happen. So, absolutely. All right, well, we'll check back in. Great, good, you know, good luck with your book. An awesome job getting the 52 card shows on the way here before the year's over. So, congrats on that, and take care. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me on as well.
What an awesome conversation that was, Ryan. I really appreciate him coming on, giving his vintage expertise with us. I learned a lot. I hope you guys did too. It's great to see some pretty cool cards as well. Just to the conclusion of the Pittsburgh-Minnesota Thursday night game. Again, Minnesota's in a nail biter, kind of testing the nerves of their fans, but they got away with the win. Pittsburgh wasn't able to score in the last play of the game with the potential to stay, to tie it. Pretty big game from Dalvin Cook. He had 2 touchdowns, so like over 200 yards rushing. Jefferson looked nice as usual. I really liked what Deontay Johnson's showing. He's still pretty good for Pittsburgh, but Big Ben tried to reel him back. Couldn't get it done late, unfortunately. So both those teams are in a tough spot right now, kind of 6-7 now for Minnesota and 6-6-1 for Pittsburgh. So kind of the outside looking in when it comes to the playoffs, but both those teams have shown really good football at times and really bad football at times. Pittsburgh got in the hole really early. It was tough for them to get out of it, but I'll just do a little bit of product review, some headlines with you, a couple buy and sells here to close out the night. Kind of one headline that kind of caught my eye was that Russell Wilson came out and said he wants to play in Seattle for 20 years. Kind of believe when I see it. I think he's the drumbeat of people talking about him leaving. He probably was kind of tired of hearing that or just wanted to squash that. But I still think it's a big possibility he could move on. A lot of, you know, I listened to the first draft ESPN podcast because I enjoy the draft quite a bit. But one of my favorite parts of the NFL season is the NFL draft. And they feel pretty strongly, the Eagles, with their where they're at in their 3 first-round picks. They're going to take a shot at one of the quarterbacks. There's really no high-end quarterbacks. There's a couple upside quarterbacks that could be taken. And kind of the feeling is that with the capital they have, they might as well take a shot at a quarterback to challenge Hurts. So just kind of think about that. If you're a Hurts fan or a Hurts investor, that he might have somebody there next year to challenge him that they could turn to. And then Minshew looked good last week. I know, again, it was the Jets. It was a weak team, but I thought he looked pretty good. NFL.com power rankings right now, just kind of, I thought it was interesting. They have Green Bay, Arizona, Tampa Bay, 1, 2, and 3 in their power rankings. So the top 3 teams are all NFC teams. The NFC playoffs is going to be really exciting. It's going to be a fun one. And then the first AFC team to make the list is the New England Patriots, back to fourth. So like I said, the whole changing of the guard, they're done with the owning the AFC East is not – close to done. So they're back, it looks like. A little bit of product review for you. Update XR last week. Again, kind of underwhelmed with XR compared to previous years. It's a little too flashy, I thought just the coloring. You can't really see the players as well. I'm just not a fan, to be frank with you. Couple of sales just of note. Devonta Smith, RPA out of 5 for 170. Mac Jones out of 249 for 182. That's just a numbered parallel. And then a Mac Jones number at a 49 for 500. I'm just going to say what I feel about those cards. Those are big overbuys. I don't think those are good prices, especially Mac Jones in a double zero jersey. I just don't see those being the cards that people want of Mac Jones down the line. So if you're getting those type of hits out of beginning hits out of Spectra or XR with Mac Jones wearing double zero, I definitely would be selling those. I just go wait for his actual numbered cards that they in the Patriots uniform that you want. He also had a very massive card out of XR Pop. His 1/1 RPA was already pulled, $2,700 with that, Drew. So kind of interesting to see a 1/1 RPA for $2,700, only 5X on the numbered card out of 49. But still $2,700, I still probably would sell it at that price in the double zero uniform. Collegiate National Treasure still being broke a little bit. Again, that's a little bit more rare product, a little bit more expensive. Hard for breaks to get filled on those. They looked pretty good. National Treasure is normal, just kind of clean, good autos. But, it's overpriced for collegiate. Spectra, not many sales right now since it just came out yesterday. But it's way overpriced for the hobby to me. $1,100 for Hobby Box on Blowout. It's being broke a little bit less than that. It kind of reminds me of XR right now. It's not a product that I'm going to be looking for. I'm just waiting for Mosaic on the 22nd. Hopefully that comes out on time. And I hope you guys are excited for that as well. Again, Impeccable on the 15th, Illusions on the 22nd as well. And that will be kind of round out the month for football. I just want to go over a couple of buys that I'm just kind of been eyeing lately in terms of the hobby. I've been on Jefferson for a long time. I'm still on him. Right now, his PSA 10 Prism's going for $150 and $100 last couple of sales. His pop's only $186 on that with a 30% gem rate. So his PSA 10s are pretty rare. I think those are pretty good buys, especially closer to $100. That's a great buy to me. His red cracked ice, $250. I think that's a good buy as well with a pop of 25 on those. Those are really nice looking cards if you want to go the parallel route. I'm not a big fan of the red, white, and blues, but he's got one for $230 sold. There was a little pop 26. He's second in the league in art yards right now. He's had kind of two back-to-back pretty good games. He had a decent game tonight, only 70-ish yards. So he had a touchdown, but he's still second in the league in receiving. So I just like what he's doing, and I just like what he could do long-term. You know, Minnesota long-term, I'm not sure. You know, Kirk Cousins isn't going to last forever, but Cousins does seem to put up numbers. They just can't seem to put wins and like the right wins together for the Vikings. But I'm just a big fan of Jefferson. I think he's a great buy right now in terms of one of the top receivers in the league. Javonte Williams, I've been talking about him quite a bit in our rookie reports. I just think he's been a quietly really good, and people haven't noticed. And he just he dominated last week, had over 100 yards receiving. Just really, his volume keeps increasing. He's getting to the point where he's going to be that number one back next year. And I really feel if the Broncos can bring in a Rodgers or a Wilson or a quarterback for that team is ready to win. They have a lot of pieces around that can make that team do really well. And I think he would be a big part of it. So definitely kind of my Jonathan Taylor from last year. I think Javonte Williams would be my guy right now that I'm eyeing for next year for a big jump in terms of his exposure. So go pick up some Donruss. His optic hollow out of Donruss, $24. Well, you know, why not? That car could be $100, you know, if he comes out, it becomes a top five fantasy pick next year. So definitely his pink optic preview for $16. So Javonte Williams is a buy for me for sure. Kyler Murray had a couple weird sales. He had a $230 and $260 for his PSA 10 Prism. I think anything over $300 just seems good for Kyler just because he starts to come back. That team's still in great position, second in the power ranks. I really feel good about what he can do. And if they go to the playoffs and make a run, he's definitely got an eye. And remember, like, he does have a pretty high pop at $2,456 for his PSA 10, but 32% gem rate. So the PSA 10s, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of his Prism rookies, but they aren't gemming very well. I got a 9 on mine, so I can tell you that for sure. He got a red ice go for $1,325. There's only 93. I do like that. $1,325 is pretty expensive, but for just thinking about where those other quarterbacks are and with that one only being a pop around 93 under 100, I think that's actually a pretty good deal, especially if he gets a Super Bowl run. That could be a very valuable card. So those are kind of my three buys. Just want to mention, like, I noticed just because he was on my sell list a few weeks ago, around week 3 or 4, but Dalvin Cook, he's on a great night tonight. He is going for $70 for his PSA 10. So he's definitely, the bomb's fallen out in him. So I hope you were able to take advantage of when he was hitting around 150. Who am I watching for week 14? Just a couple of guys that I'm kind of looking at. I really want to see Javonte Williams. I want to see if he can keep kind of earning that RB1 workload with Denver, especially if he's a guy on my buy list. I just want to keep watching him pretty closely. I want to see if Ja'Marr Chase can get back on track. He's been a little bit slow lately. Looks like he's going to be out of reach to kind of get that rookie touchdown record for receiving, which I was hoping he'd be able to get. So I'm kind of hoping he gets back on track. Josh Allen, he's been kind of up and down a little bit. The team's been up and down a little bit. They looked like a top team in the league some weeks, and they've looked like a middle tier team some weeks. So kind of need the Bills to settle in and get ready for their playoff run. And it's got to start this week. And I'm so going to see how Josh Allen responds to that Patriots game. I know the Patriots defense is really good right now, and Bill Belichick's doing a great job with them. And I also know that weather was a big deal for Buffalo there. It probably hurt them more than hurt New England. So I'm just kind of really want to see if Josh Allen can get back on track. I am watching Kyler because, like I said, he's a buy for me. And I think that last week they kind of limitedly used him, so they can start releasing him a little bit and let him kind of play the way he plays. Or is he going to be kind of in the pocket more, being a little more safe so he can stay healthy? We'll see. And then I think Dak, you know, Dak's been kind of up and down a little bit this season. I think Washington's a big game. Washington's getting a lot of momentum, getting a lot of confidence, and Dallas needs to win this week, and they're going to win. It's going to be behind Dak, and he's getting his receivers back. So to see if he can put a nice game together against Washington, be kind of good for him to get back on track in terms of making that type of Super Bowl run, kind of out of the MVP race. It looks like it's kind of a Tom Brady race right now, but I won't see how Dak does. And to kind of close out, I thought just some important games for the hobby and just important games for the playoff push that we want to take note of this week. Dallas at Washington, I just mentioned. Washington's only a 4.5 underdog. It's, like I said, it's a big game for Dallas. It's a big game for Washington. If Washington wins, it really changes things for them as Washington's kind of creeped up to the playoff picture. Baltimore at Cleveland. Cleveland's actually a 2.5 favorite, which I think is surprising. With Baltimore dropping that game last week to Pittsburgh, If Cleveland wins, that AFC North is a mess. Everybody's going to be within a game again, and nobody's a clear-cut in division lead. Las Vegas at KC, I think that's an interesting game just because Vegas has been kind of up and down. They seem to play well against KC, and KC's given right now 9.5 points. KC's the favorite, so I'm very interested to see if Vegas keep it closer than that. Vegas coming off a loss at Washington, or sorry, at home to Washington. See if they can get anything going there. A couple more here. San Fran at Cincy. I think that's a big game because both those teams are kind of middle of the pack right now. Both need wins to keep like trajecting to the possible playoff push. I'd love to see Cincinnati get that game. I just want to see Burrow in the playoffs. And San Fran, there's kind of that loss to Seattle is going to hurt them, I think. So we'll see if they get back on track. Last two, Buffalo at Tampa. Tampa's a -3.5. Again, want to see what Josh Allen does in that game. It's a big game for Buffalo. They got, I mean, if they lose this game, they're going to be almost 500. I think they will be 500. Tampa Bay, because they've been great since their loss to Washington. So hoping they can just keep going up, maybe in that number one seed in the NFC, which is possible. But Arizona and Green Bay have a pretty good lead on them. Lastly, the Rams at Arizona. Arizona's a -2.5 Monday night game. Be a fun one to watch. Rams looking for revenge. They don't want to get swept by the Arizona, so I think it's going to be a lot closer. I'd be betting the Rams there. I just think they might get them this time. But overall, I think those are the kind of the cream of the crop when it comes to the NFC West. And I think the Rams are a little bit better than what their ranking is in the power rankings for the season. I just think they're in a little bit dry spell. They're going to get back on track soon and be good to go. So I'm excited for week 14 as we get closer and closer to the playoffs. Again, want to thank Ryan for coming on the show. Check out him at Breakout Cards and check out his book. Support him. He's doing a lot of hard work for the hobby, and I just really enjoyed the conversation. So make sure you check him out, give him a follow, and you guys take care, and we'll talk after week 14.